Welcome to our newest Hearts Unite the Globe hug patrons, Annie Olchek. We sincerely appreciate your support. Thank you for joining our community and making a difference through Patreon. Judy Miller, thank you for being our first Buzzsprout supporter for Bereaved But Still Me. Buzzsprout started a new program where you can actually support the podcast of your choice. There are so many ways you can support HUG. All you have to do is visit our website, heartsunitetheglobe.com, to see how you too can help empower, educate, and enrich the lives of individuals in the CHD and bereaved communities. Thank you all for your continued support.
When you're in your 40s, you're going to have the Arnold surgery. And it's
when you
tell somebody in their 20s about what's going to happen when they're in their 40s, I just didn't take it seriously, to be honest.
Who is Jake Ryan and why did he write a book? What happens when it's the parent who is the heart warrior? How do you prepare your children for your heart surgery? Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the mother of an adult with a critical congenital heart defect. My child is 28 years old, my inspiration and the reason I am the host of your program. Today's show is Jake Ryan and Dear Franklin, a book for kids with heart warrior parents. And our guest is Jake Ryan. We'll start today's program by learning a bit about Jake and his immediate family. In the second segment, we'll talk about the book he wrote. And in the final segment, we'll learn more about Jake Ryan's plans for the future. Jake Ryan was a busy father of 3.5-year-old twins, a son and daughter, when his life changed forever. He collapsed during a routine workout one day at the gym. Fortunately, he was rushed to the hospital, where he was diagnosed with an aortic aneurysm and a faulty mitral valve. After his surgery, he worried that he would not be able to be the kind of involved and playful dad that his kids were used to. Finding no books for children that described a parent having a cardiac incident and needing surgery, he decided to write such a book. Today, he lives in New York City and is a single dad to his now teenaged children. He runs a life coaching business. He can be found on TikTok and Instagram as @FreeJakeRyan. Welcome to Heart with Anna, Jake.
Anna, hi. So good to be here. How are you?
It is so good to be here with you, too. I have a lot to learn about TikTok and Instagram. I do have an Instagram account, but I do not have a TikTok account.
I'm really big on TikTok, and I play around with Instagram, but I'm a big fan of TikTok.
Yeah, it seems like the place to be nowadays, and people do all kinds of crazy and fun things.
Super informative, too. That's what really got me into it was you think of it in a kind of lighthearted manner, and it is. There's a lot of fun stuff on there, but I learned so much. There's so much content for anything that you're interested in. TikTok is a great place to get any kind of information from.
I guess I need to go out there and look up Free Jake Ryan.
Do it. Say hi to me. Make sure to tag me for sure.
Oh my gosh. First, I have to learn how to sign up for it, Jake. I could do it. I could do it.
You're a champion.
I don't know about that. My age is showing when I don't have my own TikTok account. It seems like everybody who's anybody has a TikTok account. So I guess I better get with the program. But
you will be huge on TikTok within 6 months, Anna. I guarantee it.
I don't know. But let's get started with this podcast because I'm really excited to talk to a fellow author. And you have a really interesting story to share. We learned in your bio that you had to have heart surgery as an adult. And I've seen you face to face because we're in Zoom, friends. We're recording this with Zoom and we started out with our video on. Now the video is off, but I could say you're a really fit guy. And it must have been quite a surprise to you to find out that you had an aortic aneurysm. So can you tell us about how you first discovered that you had heart problems?
I played sports when I was young and I would always have the physical beforehand and I had a really pronounced heart murmur. And I always thought it was really cool. It was something different about me as a kid.
Okay.
It had no impact on my being at all, on anything.
So even though they told you you had a heart murmur, they didn't say every year you should see a cardiologist, this could turn into something? serious?
No, because the heart murmur was completely just, oh, that's an interesting heart rhythm you have. So the heart murmur wasn't anything that I was alerted to that was ever going to be an issue. But when I was 20, 22, somewhere in there, I was having a routine checkup. But at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger had just had valve replacement.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right. And so when I was 20, 22, they're like, when you're in your 40s, you're going to have the Arnold surgery. And it's
like when you
tell somebody in their 20s about what's going to happen when they're in their 40s, I just didn't take it seriously, to be honest.
So was that the first time that you heard you have a valve problem? Because it sounds like before that, they just said murmur.
Yeah, yeah. But that was the very first time that I was alerted to the fact that I had this valve situation. They said it, like, you're going to need this surgery. But between that moment and the moment that I passed out in the gym, I did not monitor it. I was not on top of it at all. I always worked out, but it was probably in my late 30s where I started to slow down a little bit at the gym. And honestly, then I just thought I was getting old. And I just thought, oh, this is what happens when you get older. You hear about it. And I'm like, okay, so I can't do this. I can't run as far. And little did I know, my valve was closing up. It was closing. And I didn't know that. And there were even times where I would feel the pressure of it closing. And so I was not on top of it at all. Didn't take it seriously at all. Never thought about it. Yeah. And then I was in the gym. I was working out and I started running and I just couldn't catch my breath. So I thought I wasn't warmed up enough. So I went, I got a lift and I felt better. And I came back to the treadmill and I still couldn't catch my breath. And I honestly, I'm just going to plow through. And that was my attitude.
So many athletes do that.
Yeah,
because that's what your coaches tell you from the time you're young.
And that's the thing. It's like, as soon as I get my second wind, I'll be okay. But I couldn't get my first wind. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
There were only a couple people in the gym with me that day. And one of them actually was this famous musician, this guy, Nathan Falwell, who's in a band called Kings of Leon. And he happened to be there and I passed out. I managed to slow the treadmill down enough. So I stopped the treadmill and then I must have tried to sit down on the treadmill. And that's when I passed out. And so he called the front desk and he got me up, but I didn't know what had happened. I had blacked out and my face hurt. My teeth hurt. I fell on my face. And then, a short time later, the paramedics flooded in and the firemen. And that was the beginning.
Were you alarmed when all these people showed up? Because it sounds like you weren't unconscious at that time.
Honestly, I kept saying, you know what? I'm fine. I'm good. I'm fine. No, I wasn't at all alarmed at that point. I just thought it was going to be like, they'd come and they'd look at me. At that point, it's like mandatory that you get in an ambulance. So when I was leaving my building and they have to wheel me out, I just felt like it was a nuisance. It wasn't until I got to the hospital and they have to take you to the closest hospital. Unless you say otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that at the time. So they took me to the closest hospital, which was a hospital that was closing down, that had been open forever in Greenwich Village, New York, and was closing down. And it might have shut its doors 2 weeks after I was there. It was in a state of disarray. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get a bed in the emergency room. At that point, they said, we have to find out if you had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. That's when I became really concerned, because even though I felt okay, I felt pretty normal, except for I was like, what does that mean? What do you mean? You have to find that out. I didn't know what it meant.
So they were like, wait a minute, we need to get blood work. Was your heart rate okay?
Well, no, that's the thing. They knew that I had passed out. And so they knew that at a certain point that something had happened with my heart. And I still honestly don't know what it is that they measure to determine whether it was a heart attack or what it was.
There are enzymes that show up in your blood if you've had a heart attack to show that part of your heart tissue has died. So that's what they're looking for. Yeah, my husband just went through that. He didn't pass out, but his heart rate was way, way too fast. And they were afraid that maybe he had a heart attack. And so they were looking for that marker. They call it a marker to see if you have had a heart attack. And of course, we know it could happen at any age. And even though you were in a gym and you're fit, you hear this with people who are runners and football players, and it's scary. So at this point, did you have the wherewithal to say, oh, wait a minute, I have a valve problem? Or were you just so taken aback by the fact that they said the words heart attack that slipped your mind?
You know what? I don't remember having the wherewithal, and I don't remember even being aware of it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And because it was something that I would later recall, like, oh, yeah, I remember.
Well, you were in shock. You were in shock.
Yeah, and I was scared. At that point, maybe I was shook because I was like, I didn't know. And waiting to get a bed or to get a room or anything. And then somebody was wheeled in and he'd been drinking for days. He was this big, huge guy and he threw up everywhere. So it was like the whole place. It was just like
going from
bad to worse.
You just wanted to get out of there, didn't you?
I wanted to go home. I really just wanted to go see my kids.
Yeah.
And that was it. So I was at that hospital for a couple nights. They ruled out I didn't have a heart attack.
A couple of nights. So they admitted you.
Yeah. Like they wouldn't let me leave, but I wasn't going to have the surgery there. So I think I went in Wednesday night. I had to stay there the next night as well. And then Friday morning, they discharged me. And then that afternoon, I went to have a consultation with my surgeon and he's the coolest person in the world. Like this guy was, he said to me, he goes, and I'm not 100% sure he used this exact phrase, but in my mind, that's what it was. He said, they ain't made a heart yet I can't fit a valve for. Something like that.
Oh my gosh. And
I know I'm doing a little bit of Texas right now for you, but he's not from Texas, but he was that cool. He's one of the premier surgeons in the world, this guy. So I'm like, I'll just do whatever he says. I think there are people who want to know every single aspect of this procedure, of any procedure. And I'm the opposite. I didn't want to know anything. I didn't study it. I just was going to do everything my doctor said. Mm-hmm. I was going to be the perfect patient. I did not know what the procedure was all about. And I was fine not knowing. I remained willfully ignorant about it in terms of what they did. Mm-hmm. So
talk to me about your support. You said you were at this hospital. It was not your hospital. It's a hospital that's getting ready to shut down. Mm-hmm. You go from thinking it's just another day at the gym to passing out to being stunned, I'm sure, and then maybe a little embarrassed and anxious, not wanting to go to this hospital, just wanting to go home and then be told, oh, wait a minute, maybe you had a heart attack. Okay, the first thing I would do is pick up the phone and call my husband. What did you do? Who did you call?
My then wife was already with me. And unfortunately for her, she had a lot of experience in hospitals. She had lost family members before. And so she is great in a crisis anyway. And she really took over at that point. There wasn't a lot that I could do in terms of running things. And she was running things. And so
sounds like she became your advocate.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And so it all happened pretty quickly. When we went for the consultation, though, I had a meeting with the surgeon and he told me what was going to happen and he broke it down for me. This is what's going to happen on day one. This is what's going to happen after a week. This is where you're going to be. And he laid out the whole blueprint of how my recovery would be and what I would be doing by week eight. He said, you'll be on the floor doing pushups. He broke it down for me, but I was still so shook up from passing out that when we left and we were going to get a taxi to go home, and I was going to go home for the weekend and then we were going to come back on Monday and begin the procedure, I felt like I was going to pass out again because I was so shook up. They admitted me that day. So my hospital stay ended up being really long for this type of procedure just because I had the first couple nights at this one hospital and then a pre-weekend before the actual week or 4 or 5 days of what that type of operation entails. So I was away from my kids for, it was like 10 days, 11 days, something like that, a long time. And they were so young, being away from them was the hardest part. I mean, everything was hard. Everything was hard and scary, but yeah, what to do, what to tell the kids was challenging.
Home Tonight Forever by the Baby Blues Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed in the podcast are not those of Hearts Unite the Globe, but of the hosts and guests, and are intended to spark discussion about issues pertaining to congenital heart disease or bereavement.
You are listening to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Before the break, we were learning about your heart condition, Jake, and your family a little bit. But in this segment, I want to talk about the book that you decided to write. So you told us at the end there that what to tell the kids, that was the hardest part. And when I think of that, I think of if I'm going to write a book, it would be for little kids. But your book isn't. You took your book from the eyes of an 11-year-old girl, and that is really interesting. So talk to me about how you came up with this concept.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, when I was in the hospital, I remember being in the recovery room and thinking, this has got to be a book. And then when I was discharged, they give you a little care package, and I got a heart pillow to hold on to for when you sneeze or whatever, laugh, anything. And there were also a couple of books, but they weren't novels necessarily. They were smaller books, but I thought I need to write a book for this experience, for anybody who's had it or anybody who's going through it. And so I actually wrote the first drafts of the book during that first year of recovery. And I think I probably had it in my mind that by the year anniversary, I want to have the book done. And I did. But the hero of the book, she was at this weird age. My kids were still 4 years old. And so they weren't writing in diaries or reading yet. So it was hard finding the voice for that character to tell the story through. And so the book didn't really gel. I was happy that I did it. It wasn't something that I felt super confident about in terms of it being of value to anybody. It was more just like I wrote a book and put it away for a while, put it away till COVID.
Wow.
And then it was like at the beginning, for a long time. And so it was at the beginning of COVID that I thought, well, I have got a lot of time right now. So what can I go to market with? And I brought the book back out and I started reworking the book. My kids were older. I get asked this all the time about this girl, this 11-year-old girl who's the hero and the narrator and how it's her diary. And I think my daughter and I have a really similar sense of humor, like always aligned. We think things are funny that other people might think are just sick. Like we could do gallows humor. We could do, is it too soon humor, that kind of thing. And
okay. We
just think things are funny that, I don't know. And so it was really her voice in a way that was the inspiration for this character. It wasn't a conscious choice where I'm like, oh, I'm going to write a story about an 11-year-old girl and use her diary. Those ideas just come to you. You're an author. Like, where do the ideas come from? They find you. And she says that her first memory period is me on the floor in the gym surrounded by firemen and paramedics. And I'm laughing because it's sad and funny. So that voice just became the voice of this story. Mm-hmm. And thought it'd be interesting to hear a real kid. And that's one of the things that really separates this book and is special about it is what I keep hearing from people is this girl is so genuine and authentic, and she's not a cookie cutter little kid character.
Mm-hmm.
What she has to say is sharp. She's sharp and witty and has this kind of, not sarcastic, but kids are so much smarter than we give them credit for all the time. And they're aware of things that we try to keep from them. And so my wife and I at the time, we couldn't tell the kids that, oh, dad's in the hospital, he's having heart surgery. Yeah, obviously, they were too young at that point. So we lied. I think we told them I was in California working or something. And that shows up in the book. But you can't get away with that.
No, you can't. You're going to get caught, which is
what
we tell our children. Don't lie to us. You know you're going to get caught.
But that's the thing. The kids see everything. They might not always listen to you, but they see. And so they're watching you. They're watching everything. And
so it sounds like you have a really good relationship with your daughter to be able to feel so aligned with her sense of humor and that you can write from a girl's perspective.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you have sisters?
I have a sister. We're very close, yes. And I'm really close with my mom and my son, too. I have great relationships with both of them. And a lot of it is just from a willingness to communicate, to have the conversations that are uncomfortable.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm curious, did you show the book to your kids and did your kids say, hey, Dad, nobody was in that here, or you got to change this? Or were they like, wow, this is perfect?
No. That's not what they said. When I was finishing the book, my daughter was at camp and I would mail her passages. But I don't think there's any teenagers out there who think their parents are cool.
I agree 100% with that. But you don't really want your kids to think you're cool.
No,
you want to be their parent. And
right.
I think by nature, moms and dads just aren't supposed to be cool. So that's okay.
You know what? And that advice I got very early on was, you're not their friend. You're their father.
Right.
And but still.
But so we wish we were the cool kids.
You'd like for them to be like, oh, my God, my dad wrote this book. He's so awesome. Oh, yeah. And then but what made it worse also, though, was when I went on TikTok. They were already on TikTok and playing around with TikTok. And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to start doing TikTok videos. And they made fun of me for a while. And then all of a sudden, now it's like I have 66,000 followers on TikTok.
Oh, my gosh.
And they,
that is huge.
And they hate it.
They hate it.
Yeah. Well, it's embarrassing. Your parents are an embarrassment, period. Parents are embarrassing to any kid. And so to have your platform stolen away by your dad, it's not that they watch my stuff. They don't. And they're not going to see my videos. But it was funny when I started doing it. I remember being this one time in a taxi with my son, and he was texting with his sister about dad's making a video right now in the taxi. And she wrote back. She wrote back, he must be stopped. I just thought that was so perfect.
I loved it.
And now I love the idea that I was uniting them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Parents do that. That you're the common enemy.
Right. Yeah. That was great.
So they didn't give you any advice on how to make the character more authentic or make you feel validated with what you did. They just said, oh my gosh, dad's writing.
What happened with the book when it really turned the corner was when I started working with my editor, Peter Olson. He's a great writer and great novelist. And it was one of those things where every time I sent him something, I was trying to impress him, because it was like being in a band and wanting to impress your bandmates.
Sure.
But it was his editing and direction that really shaped the book, really opened up. Like once she leaves home and we get into more of her life at school and what's going on with the rest of her life. Because that's the thing. It's like all of a sudden your parent has this major surgery. You have a life going on. Right?
Yeah.
It's like this is another part of your life. And so our hero in the book, she's already involved with her own life dramas when now she has to deal with her parents' morbidity.
Absolutely.
And so it's a brand new.
Or mortality.
Mortality. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but morbidity also. Dad may not be able to do as much. Dad may be more fragile, but also the mortality where, oh my gosh, you mean my dad could die? Most kids don't think about that. Most kids don't have to think about that or about their father possibly becoming less able than he was before. So you really put a challenge before your heroine at an age where she was already starting to question so much about her own body. The preteen years are so hard, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you're a preteen, it's all self-centered. You're not thinking, oh my gosh, could my dad die of a heart attack in the gym?
And you're certainly not thinking of, oh, I've got to take care of my dad.
Right.
And she wants to be the perfect daughter. And so she takes on too much responsibility and she's very involved. And interestingly enough, in the book, he doesn't want to accept help. He has a hard time accepting help, as I did. And
I was going to say, you mean like all men?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And that's the big thing. When you're so vulnerable, it's really foreign territory for a man, especially. And yet he's able to accept help from his daughter in a way that he has a nurse who comes over, doesn't want her help. His wife, all she wants to do is help. He doesn't want her help. But the daughter, there's something about the phrase, walk your way to recovery. When you're in the hospital, you got to walk. You got to start walking. You got to move. And so in the book and in real life, that was just something that I did was like, okay, I'm walking my way to recovery. I'm walking my way to recovery. I live in an apartment building and I would walk the halls and she would walk with me sometimes. And in the book, it's a big deal where she's going to walk with her dad and he's going to say, oh, you're the number one ranked walking partner. Or he has all these dad sayings that she talks about in the book, but he's able to accept her help in a way that he's not able to accept help from the people he needs to. It's a bridge he has to cross. He has to get over that in order to heal. And he does, of course, because it's the book is so winning.
So that's the message. Tell me what the message is.
Oh, well, there's a lot that I'm trying to convey because it's the whole family. This book is labeled as a middle grade book, but it's really a parenting book, I think, in my mind, almost more than anything, just in the sense that you see how the traumatic experience affects the family as a whole and each member individually, because we're all going through it. We're all a part of it. It's not your surgery. It's our surgery. It's always referred to as our surgery. And the child is affected, of course, but so is the spouse. And of course, then the patient. And so it's like, how does the family stay together and function when all of a sudden the roles are jumbled up? And yes, there is that theme where he has a hard time accepting help. And the daughter identifies it. She's very smart. And she eventually comes to realize, what's her dad's problem? Why won't he let mom help him? It's like vulnerability is not weakness, it's strength. And when you allow yourself to be vulnerable, you're actually being strong enough to say, I need help.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect, or CHD, community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, a handbook for parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
We know you're a life coach and your book was published just October 2022, so it's very recent. Do you have plans for a book tour?
Not currently doing a book tour. I'm doing a podcast tour. But,
there you go.
There's no book tour scheduled right now, but that's definitely something that I'm shooting for. Let's sell some books.
You live in Manhattan, which is a really cool place to be. There are lots and lots of bookstores, or at least last time I was in New York, there were lots of bookstores. Unfortunately, Amazon has put a lot of independent bookstores out of business.
It has.
And the economy has not helped, and the pandemic has not helped. But do you have some independent bookstores near you that would be interested in having you come sign books for them?
You know what? Right now, I'm not even in bookstores. I'm selling exclusively on Amazon.
Okay. So
that would be the first hurdle to cross.
Mm-hmm. So it's only a print-on-demand book?
Yeah, just the economics of it. My publisher was like, let's just sell on Amazon for now. This is a book that's going to be around for a long time. Unfortunately, 500,000 people in America have heart surgery every year. So I feel like this is a book that I wish existed when I had my surgery. And so I think that this book will be around for generations or a long time and will help a lot of people. And so I'm sure we'll end up in a bookstore and then there'll be the signings and we'll do that.
Mm-hmm. My children's book is called My Brother Needs an Operation.
Mm.
And I wrote it because My infant had two open heart surgeries the first year of life, and my three-year-old had to endure two open heart surgeries in the first year of his brother's life. And it was a lot for a three-year-old to have to go through two open heart surgeries, mom and dad being gone, him having to go to a daycare when he had never been in daycare before. And there was nothing. The only books I could find dealt with the child going to the hospital, not the children left behind.
Brilliant.
And I had a friend who was a writer who read the book, and she said, Anna, this is like an instant classic. This is the kind of book, like you're saying, that will be around for a long time, because sadly, there will always be children going to the hospital and leaving brothers and sisters behind. And so when you said that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's just like what that author friend of mine had said. It's almost like an instant classic, because there will always be parents or grandparents or somebody in your life, an aunt and uncle, who needs surgery, maybe not even just heart surgery. From the sounds of it, this book could apply to any kind of surgery.
Any kind of loved one
is facing something like this. Yeah.
And we didn't really even talk about, like, one of the coolest components of the book is she turns to her diary, and the whole book is told through her diary entries. And she hates the word diary so much, this girl, that she refuses to say Dear Diary. So she comes to name her diary Franklin. And that's why the book is called Dear Franklin. And in a way, she develops this relationship with this book, because she doesn't think anybody knows that she's keeping the diary. She keeps it hidden. She carries it with her everywhere she goes. And she has no one to talk to. Her best and only friend has moved away a year ago. The girl she grew up with, who she's so close with, isn't there. So she doesn't have her to talk to. And she's stuck doing this play at school with this really charismatic boy who she's always hated. And he's just wild. And he comes into the book and steals the book. He's an amazing character. And he surprises her, he surprises us. And it's really my favorite component of the book is the begrudging friendship that she develops with him. But it's really, I think, something that could get kids writing in journals and keeping a journal. And I've journaled forever. And it's such a valuable tool for a person to really get to know themselves and to discover insights through journaling that otherwise you probably aren't going to be tapping into your subconscious that much in that way that you are when you just do just a stream of consciousness type of journaling that she does. And it saves her, because she doesn't have anybody. She doesn't know who to trust. Her parents had lied to her initially.
Yeah.
It's that thing where you don't have time to parent in the way that you did, because all of a sudden your dad's a patient. So having that outlet and having that freedom to express yourself and to voice your fears. It's hard to be mad at your dad when he just had heart surgery, but you're going to be. And who, things are going to come up. Like, you're a real person and you're going to have these real experiences. And so it's through her diary that's responsible for her arc, for her growth. And it's one of my plans to sell a companion piece diary journal for kids or for adults. Like I said, I journal every day. So I think it's super important and super helpful.
A lot of people use journaling as therapy. For me, writing is therapy. I think for a lot of people, writing is therapy. Absolutely. So that's good. I was wondering, what are your plans for the future? So you plan on creating a companion diary or just a series of journals that people can use?
Yeah, I definitely want to see this book as a series for sure. But I'm finishing another book now, and it's part of a bigger series. And it's bigger. It's kind of fantasy. It's a cross between a Princess Bride and Game of Thrones. And it's part of a 5-book series. And also I do something that I've become really passionate about is, you mentioned that I have this life coaching that I do. And so I used to send out a morning newsletter to all my clients. And it grew. And now I have this huge email list of people who get this newsletter that I turn out every day. Every morning I write it. It's called the Firewave Manifesto. And you can sign up for it at any of my sites, people. And it's just become this really profound experience every day.
How do you come up with material every single day? Is it short?
It's not that short. I jokingly say it's not as short as people probably would like it to be, but it's funny and it's inspiring and it's motivating and it's no nonsense. It's really like my whole kind of life coaching philosophies all wrapped up in this newsletter, but it's a lot of storytelling also. Mm-hmm. And so I get asked that, how do I turn it out every day? The ideas come and I go and I tell the stories and there's always a great message in it. And so I've started to platform off of that into ideas for a podcast, which right now I'm doing on TikTok mainly, but it's just a way to provide value to people and create content. So I want to write another Dear Franklin book, but I think it's right now like in third position or something.
Yes, because there's only so much time. You do have to prioritize.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It sounds like you're coming out with all kinds of creative ideas and looking at a variety of genres. You've got TikTok, you've got Instagram, you've got a podcast and your books. That's amazing. Your creative juices are really flowing right now.
Yeah, they are. Thank you.
So you said that your book is available on Amazon. Can people still go to barnesandnoble.com or some of the other bookstore websites to get your book?
Yes. What's the other one called?
Ingram Spark?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
So that means that, okay. So I was thinking what the proof that you sent me was from Ingram. Even though it's a print on demand book, your book is available wherever people normally consume books because they can special order it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you also have a website?
I have something called Stand Store, which is a link on my TikTok page and my Instagram page, where all my merchandise, everything that I offer is available at that store. So that's why I haven't had a website until now.
So we can put the link to that in the show notes. And if anybody wants your manifesto, your life coaching services, they can go to that one link and they'll see all your products and services.
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. Okay, we will do that.
Great.
I can't believe our time is up already. This has just gone by so fast, but I'm not going to let you go before I ask one more question.
Okay.
And that is, what advice do you have for parents who want to create books for their children?
That's such a great question. I think that I ascribe to this theory that if you're one page ahead of somebody in a book, you have something to teach. But as parents, obviously, you have everything to teach your children. So my advice would be, if you have an inkling to do it, don't let this notion that, oh, I'm not a writer, stop you. Because everybody's telling their life story every day of their lives. And so sit down and write a page. Don't try to write the whole book. Just write a page and just keep showing up every day and move that needle a little bit. And maybe it'll take you a whole year to do it. But if you wrote a page or a half a page a day in a year, you're going to have a book. So the key is, I think, that undoes people who aren't naturally predisposed to write is this notion that it's exciting to start and then the momentum is gone. But you have to look at it long term and just keep showing up every day and write that page. And it's such a great thing and such a way to leave your mark. And you obviously are an expert. If you're a parent, you have to have some expertise and you're involved with your children and you have some kind of insight that's going to be of value, not just to your kids, but to other people. So whatever is most personal is universal. So,
well, you're an expert on your own life.
Yeah, of course.
If nothing else, you're an expert on that. You may not be an expert in any particular field, but you're an expert on your own life. And I believe that everybody has a story to share.
Agreed.
Well, Jake, this has just been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Jake, and for sharing your stories with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun, and I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, that does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today. Please come back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern Time. Until then, visit us at heartsunitetheglobe.org. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have become inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart community. Heart to Heart with Anna with your host, Anna Jaworski, can be heard at any time wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode is released every Tuesday from noon Eastern Time.